I'm fond of saying that kids have a hole in their soul in the shape of their dad, that God whispers into the wombs of mothers that there's this one that will love them like no other. And if a father is unable or unwilling to fill that hole, it can leave a wound that's not easily healed. And I know that because I'm a wounded soul.
That's Roland Warren, CEO of CareNet, who will be the keynote speaker at the 10th annual RUC fundraising banquet. Join us on April 4th as we celebrate a decade of support. Make your reservations now at relationshipsunderconstruction.com.
Welcome to spring. And just like the daffodils popping up, there's some other things that are going to last maybe just about as long. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, Barry. It's very good to be back with you here. And yes, we are together in the studio rather than going by Skype this week, which is a plus. As far as I'm concerned, it's much easier to engineer when we're face-to-face.
Absolutely.
And I can give you symbols like we have 5 minutes left and or...
categorically just ignore.
Yeah, even when I give you the finger across the throat like, stop, we're out of time. Sometimes you don't stop.
Oh, I just thought you had an itch. I'm sorry.
Okay. We'll work on our hand signals.
Well, I think we're not the only ones who need to work on their hand signals a little bit because, as I mentioned in our open, it is spring now. Technically, we're recording this on what I consider to be the first day of spring, which is the 21st of March. But, you know, according to all the weather folks and those people who know better than we are, like the climate change folks, spring actually started on the 20th, about 5 o'clock in the evening. Okay, great, fine. All right, I'll take those few extra hours and call it spring and reduce winter by that much more. I have no problem with that. But we are into spring now. And what is one of the first things other than robin singing, Chuck, that you notice about spring? Daffodils start coming.
Yeah, crocuses, daffodils.
Yes, those beautiful, beautiful flowers that come up in the early, early spring and don't tend to last more than a couple, 3 weeks before they disappear again.
Yeah.
Sort of like the vast majority of Democrat presidential candidates. I mean, honestly, Chuck, you and I kind of kick this back and forth. We've got to talk about this. I mean, first of all, the scorecard to note how many players are trying to run against President Donald Trump in 2020 is starting to look like a ticker tape parade. Used to be that when you had a sitting incumbent president who was sitting on 49% to 51% popularity, the number of names you had on the opposite side trying to line up to run against them, you could have fit on a post-it note. Not this president.
No.
Not this cycle. I believe right now, officially, there are 16 Democrats who have announced in one fashion or the other their intention to run for the nomination for the Democratic nomination for President of the United States. I would like to go down the entire list.
I can count 14 right at the moment.
Okay.
But
there are a couple that we can't count quite yet because right. They're still dangling their toes over the water.
Well, and there's also the flurry of little local single issue candidates that always pop up. If you recall, in 20,
sort of like Pete Buttigieg, out of Fort Wayne.
Yeah, you and I talked about this during the last set of presidential debates, if you'll recall, because we counted up the official number of Republican candidates was like 12 or 16, maybe, or.
Oh, there was, the Republican candidates, there were 16.
Yes.
The Democratic candidates, I believe there were like 34.
But if you recall, we found a website that listed all of them, and there was about 35 candidates.
Yeah, okay, and 34, 35. Yeah.
And the Democrats had about 38.
Yes.
So I'm guessing that there's probably about the same number of the rent is too darned high party and that kind of thing that are going to run us. You know, remember that guy? Except he didn't say darned. He said the other word. Yeah.
When what party was it that Pat Paulson usually ran on?
Oh, he was an independent.
Oh, okay. So
Pat was always an independent. Over and over and over and over and over.
And then, you know, you had the Reform Party and Pat Buchanan.
Well, okay, look. You can't take away from the Reform Party the fact that they threw the election to Bill Clinton in 1992.
Absolutely did, with Ross Perot. That's
right. And also got him reelected. Because if you remember, Ross Perot ran again.
Mm-hmm, now, absolutely.
When it fell apart was when they created a true Frankenstein monster by running Pat Buchanan and Lenore Filani. Lenore Filani. And she was literally a Marxist. So you had this Pat Buchanan, former Nixon staffer, and Lenore Filani, who presumably was a Stalinist, and... That is not a clean team make, and really they were just trying to keep the party alive, which they didn't.
Right. Now, okay, so today's Democrat Party 2020 version is inspiring a great deal of confidence even among hardcore leftists, because almost to a man jack of them, they're all basically looking at the field right now and saying, Trump's going to get reelected in 2020. Okay, let's go down a partial list, because again, this list can't be exhaustive, because I'm sure even before this airs on Saturday, there will probably be a couple more Democrats announcing they're running for president. So, in no particular order, okay, we're going to start with Bernie Sanders. Everybody knows Bernie, the socialist from Vermont, who is as leftist as you can possibly get, but Bernie is definitely in. He is running for president. Another name that we know for sure who's running for president is Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, what most people jokingly refer to as Pocahontas.
Or Liawatha.
Or Liawatha.
Yeah.
Based upon her specious claim of being Native American, and then coming to find out it was, what, 1,024th? Percent in her DNA that could be claimed as Native American.
It was low enough that number was in question.
Yeah, even that number was in question. So pretty bad stuff. So Warren is running. Okay, then we have Democrat Congresswoman Kirsten Gillibrand from New York.
Senator.
Oh, that's right. She is a senator.
She's sitting in Hillary's old
seat.
That's
right. It's Hillary's old seat. And there's one person
who's
not running and has stated publicly that they're not going to be running, which means look for them to jump in about November.
I was
going
to say, and then later she said, well, probably not running later.
Yes, probably not. So, okay. Another one that we have is another senator, sitting senator, Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota. How many people have ever heard
of Amy Klobuchar? Yeah. In fact, when I first saw her name, I'm like, what?
But she did rise to internet prominence here recently, because we found out that Amy's a no-nonsense gal. If her staffers don't bring her silverware with her salad, she will make them give up their comb, and she will eat her salad with their comb. Which, honestly, the visual on that turns your stomach.
When I heard that, I'm like, this cannot be real.
Now, okay, and she defended the comment. Instead of walking back the comment, she defended it by basically claiming that she's a mom. And I'm thinking, okay, so now we have child endangerment that we can throw onto the list.
Well, you know, it may have been a joke. Okay, fine. You forgot my silverware. Let's have your comb.
Yes.
Now, we all know how those kind of things can get started, but apparently this is a pattern with her that she's essentially abusive to her staff.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
People that are abusive to their staff are probably not going to be a great candidate for president.
No.
Some people would claim that Trump was abusive to his staff. Although other people that have worked for him have said, no, he's wonderful to work for as long as you do what he asks you to do. If you start going off on your own and doing things that you're not supposed to do, things can get real ugly for you real fast.
Well, that can happen anywhere, Chuck.
Well, do that to any boss.
Exactly. Do that to any boss and you're going to have trouble. Okay, let's keep going down the list. This list is going to start sounding somewhat vaguely weighted one direction, Chuck, because we have Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey. Senator Cory Booker, whose most recent claim to fame, besides his Spartacus moment during the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, is that he's now dating actress Rosario Dawson, and so he's trying to use her 15 minutes of fame in Hollywood in order to help boost his chances. His problem is that the Hollywood money is going to a different candidate right now, a fellow senator. See, I'm starting to see a trend here, right?
Yes,
senator, 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 senator. Senator Kamala Harris from California. Now, Harris is basically a hot mess. Okay, let's just be quite honest. She's an absolute hot mess. And the, one of the latest things on Kamala Harris was is that the former, was it mayor of San Francisco, Willie Brown?
Well, he was a California senator, president of the Senate or the House of Representatives, I forget.
That supposedly...
let's just say he aided her campaign in return for...
He aided her advancement in politics for valuable considerations, let's put it that way.
Yes. They were an item.
Yeah, or as we would say when you're writing out deeds and contracts and you don't want to reveal how much money, for $1 and other valuable considerations.
Yes, well, they're basically Willie Brown has come out right out and said, this is a woman of minor talent who basically slept her way into the Senate.
Right, and so you got that to deal with. Okay, so I don't know if we've exhausted the list of senators yet.
No, we have not.
We have not. So who we got next? Do you remember who the next senator
is? All right.
Is? Now, on the upside, Chuck, let me just offer a little note to the Republican majority in the Senate. Now would be a fantastic time to bring a rules change to the Senate to say that if you run for president, you have to give up your Senate seat.
Yeah, oh, gosh.
They could clean house and have a 60-vote majority like that.
Yeah, real quick. No, I take it back. We have run out of senators.
Okay, so that I thought that was the last of the senators. Now let's jump over to the House.
Okay.
Because we do have a couple, three members of the U.S. Congress who have decided to run. The first one being Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii.
Right.
Now, Chuck, you and I have discussed this before. Tulsi Gabbard is my dark horse for the Democrat Party.
Yeah.
I believe that any of the front runners in the Democrat Party would be completely insane not to pick her as a running mate.
As a VP, yeah.
Not because Hawaii is so rich with votes, but because she brings gravitas
yes.
to the ticket that none of the rest of them could ever manufacture in their entire lives.
She's articulate. She's attractive.
She's former military. She's well-spoken. Now, the big problem is she's as progressive wacko as Bernie Sanders.
Well, if you'll recall, since the Democratic long knives are out, and by that what I mean is, the opposition research is very active in the Democratic candidacies, and she's already taken a long knife in the back over a stance that she has long since repudiated on homosexual marriage.
Right. Yes. She has repented of her belief in traditional family values.
Right.
In order to, you know, advance in the Democratic Party.
There are people that have come out and said, I will never support her because at one time everybody at one time was for traditional marriage.
Yeah, because nobody ever dreamed anything else.
Including Barack Obama, if you'll recall.
Absolutely.
Barack Obama was very clear. I'm all for traditional marriage. A marriage is between one man and one woman. And where were we by, that was in 2008. Where were we by 2012?
A complete and utter flip-flop.
Yeah, exactly.
Which many of them are doing. So there's Tulsi Gabbard. Now, Chuck, here's how I framed it, I think, to you before, off air. Tulsi Gabbard is the Democrats' Sarah Palin. She has presence. She has charisma. She is fairly well-informed on most of the issues. And she is going to help a tired, aging, probably middle-of-the-road Democrat actually attract younger voters. Just like Sarah Palin did with John McCain.
John McCain. Except it was the other way around. He was supposed to attract the middle-of-the-roaders.
Yes.
The maverick.
Yeah.
And Palin came on because what he had done was so completely alienated the Republican base that he was going to go down 70 to 30.
Yes.
And Palin kept that from happening. And she
was rewarded, you know, commensurately for that.
By having him throw her under the bus.
Absolutely. And denigrate her every chance he got.
Yep.
So as if she was the reason he lost that election. No, the reason why he lost that election was he was nominated in the first place.
Yeah, essentially, yes.
Because he had such a sense of the institution that he couldn't bring himself to actually criticize a fellow senator, Barack Obama, who he agreed with on more things than he disagreed with. McCain was a horrible choice.
Yeah.
course, the Republican Party has been making horrible choices up until about 2016.
They tried to stuff Bob Dole down our throat.
We had Bob Dole. We had, as much as whether you like him or not, George Bush was not the greatest candidate in the world.
Not hardly.
Not hardly. Then you had John McCain. And then you had
Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney, who's now back in the U.S. Senate. And we may be talking about another senator who may be jumping in to run for president.
He's going to proxy.
Well, he's going to have to, I think, because I don't think Mitt Romney has a snowball's chance in Hades of ever getting the nomination.
He has the party power people in his palm.
Well, and that's the reason why Jeb Bush is out there right now saying that a Republican has to challenge Trump in 2020.
Well, it won't be Jeb either, because Jeb knows he's also, people are, in the words of Jesse Jackson, stay out the bushes. pardon my poor imitation of Jesse Jackson, but that's what he said. Stay out the bushes.
Okay, I didn't hear that one, so that's a new one on me. Okay, so all right, let's keep going down this list. So now we're going to get to the also Rand's coming once again, and number one on that list is Francis Robert Beto O'Rourke.
Beto O'Rourke.
Yes, the most Irish Latino on the face of the planet.
Or as he is known in more critical circles, Beta O'Rourke.
Beta O'Rourke, yeah, that's right. Okay, well, whichever way, Beto O'Rourke is the fever dream of a lot of progressive millennials.
The press.
Yeah, well, need I say more?
Yes. No, he is the darling of the press. Now, the reason he's the darling of the press, I think, okay, I'm gonna make a reference, and a lot of people, if they're too young, won't. John F. Kennedy. They see a Kennedy-esque figure here.
Yes, they do.
He's not bad looking. He has a sort of a charisma. I'm not affected by that charisma, but I get it. I can see.
But things are now starting to come out about Beto O'Rourke that I think he would have much rather had not ever seen the light of day.
Hence my reference to the Democratic long knives.
Yes.
If you'll recall, many things were known about John F. Kennedy that were never allowed to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very interesting that all this stuff was known about Beto O'Rourke when he ran against Ted Cruz. Why didn't it come out then? Well, one of the chief guys who's been the accuser on this short story that O'Rourke is in trouble for writing as a young man, he held it back. Why did he hold it back? Well, he was writing a book. In other words, he spiked the story in a vain hope of getting him elected over Ted Cruz. That's the bottom line. This stuff about I was holding it back for a book, no, you don't do that.
Right.
You hold it back to protect the candidate. Now, suddenly, his conscience is caught up with him, this journalist, quote-unquote. His conscience is caught up with him, and he goes, well, I just can't let this go past. And I'm still writing a book.
Of course.
So, yeah, he wrote this story. And again, he says was a work of fiction, and people write all kinds of stuff in fiction. It was rather detailed in a grisly fashion of someone who was murdering children.
Yes.
And generally, young people don't think in those terms. You might read it in a book or something, and I know when I read that kind of stuff, my stomach is turned still, and I'm 62 years old.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, O'Rourke, he's a former congressman. Former U.S. Senate.
Yeah, candidate. From where? Where was Beto from? Do you remember?
Texas.
Where?
San Antonio, right?
El Paso.
El Paso, okay.
He was in El Paso, and when he was an El Paso congressman, he was all about the wall. Got to protect the borders. Got to build that the Border Patrol has everything they need to secure the borders. And what happened as soon as he ran for president?
He ran for Senate. U.S. Senate against Ted Cruz.
All of a sudden, he's, got to tear down those walls.
Well, it's amazing how progressive leftists, even the most moderate Democrat, becomes when they're running for their party's nomination. Okay, so we're still going here. I mean, we have gotten down below the surface. So we're now to like the second layer, okay? Since we're talking about former congressmen, there's also a former congressman by the name of John Delaney. Nobody's really ever heard of John Delaney unless you lived in his congressional district. But John Delaney has thrown his hat in the ring because, well, he thinks that he should be president. Now, John Delaney's from Maryland. So
Yeah, that's a lot of strikes.
Yeah, there's a lot of strikes, and frankly, it doesn't look like... And of course, he announced almost 2 years ago, Chuck, in 2017. So do you really think that he's picked up a lot of steam in the last 2 years, being the earliest candidate in for the 2020 election? Afraid not. can he garner enough, you know, votes? Can he bring a large enough coalition of the willing together in order to engineer a spot on a ticket?
An early prediction? No,
not on your life.
Not on your life.
Not on your life. Okay, he's such a total fish out of water. Okay.
By the way, I heard an interview with him on the guys on the Patriot Channel on the satellite radio, Webb, David Webb.
Okay.
He was on David Webb's show. I love David Webb, by the way. And Webb brought him on and let him talk. Well, what's interesting about Delaney is he's very desperately trying to move to the center.
Good luck. Well, in doing so, he will destroy himself with the Democrat base.
That's what
base.
I said. Basically, he's saying... he is definitely saying, I'm not a socialist. I believe in strong social policies, but I also believe in the free market. He was proposing that we were going to control out of control drug prices through the free market and basically forcing drug companies to send some of the costs overseas.
Uh-huh.
Because, and I'm like, good luck on that, because, for instance, one of the reasons that Canada can regulate drug prices. Everybody goes, well, how come it's so cheap in Canada? It's because they refuse to pay the prices and say, you have to give us these discounts.
And so many concessions in order to get
so many concessions that they just slough off the cost on us here in the United States. If Delaney's successful, what will that do? That will create havoc.
Which means he'll never get there.
Right.
Because now, Big Pharma owns both parties.
I have no illusions about... I like that. Yeah, let's let the free market decide drug prices. Let's let Medicaid and Medicare negotiate decent drug prices, which essentially isn't happening now. Barry, who were the first really into the hopper for the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare?
Well, the hospitals.
It was hospitals, it was drug companies, and it was insurance companies. Why?
Absolutely. Because they
guaranteed were guaranteed profit.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, again, Delaney doesn't have a prayer.
No, he doesn't have a snowball's chance in the nether regions.
Yep. All right, well, here are some people who might actually have half a prayer, okay? And the reason why they have half a prayer is because historically, traditionally, we like to pick our presidents from one of two classes of people, Trump being the exception, of course. And that is former senators, which is the reason why you saw all those people from the Senate running, and former governors or sitting governors. Those tend to be the two spots in politics that if you can get yourself aligned in there or do a good job while you're there and have it lined up that the presidential race comes right after you leave office, you can line yourself up fairly nicely. And so we've got a handful of Democrat governors, mainly ex-governors, who are wanting to do this. First one is the former governor of Colorado, John Hickenlooper. Now, that name should be familiar to many of our folks here in Ohio because our own former governor was courting him like a boy with a crush on his first love.
Yeah.
Here not too long ago, when John Kasich has been trying to gin up the support in order to launch a quixotic run against sitting President Donald Trump. And what he hoped to do was to get with John Hickenlooper and convince the Democratic Party to endorse their ticket. Didn't turn out so well.
No. John Kasich is a classic example of a guy who has the ability to kid himself into believing, from Alice Through the Looking Glass, I think, two different things at once. It's impossible to believe two different things at once. And I think it's the Red Queen who says, well, I believe as many as 10 impossible contradictory things in the morning before breakfast.
Yes.
Yeah.
In the morning before breakfast.
Yeah, John Kasich is able to do that, and that's why I said John Hickenlooper is John Kasich's favorite Democrat.
Absolutely. Well, Hickenlooper's got a little problem on his hands. As Colorado is not exactly the poster child for economic stability.
No. No.
And something that recently came out in I think in memoirs or something of that nature, that Hickenlooper's having a bit of a tough time explaining is it's this little bon mot about going to see an X-rated movie with his mother.
With his mother.
In the 1970s. Okay, I don't even, Chuck, I just want to leave that right where it is. Yeah, I don't want to talk anymore about it. But just say you're probably going to hear more about it in the media. All right? So we'll just leave that alone. So I think for all his hopes and dreams, John Hickenlooper blew his chance at 2020 in the 1970s.
Yeah, and again, I'm pretty sure that's another Democratic long knife.
Oh, I'm sure that it is. So now we've got, so we move to another governor who's a sitting governor right now. That's Jay Inslee of Washington State.
Yeah, the guy nobody ever heard of.
Nobody ever heard of, but honestly, here's my thought on this. This is a triangulation strategy by Inslee. He's hoping that Bernie Sanders will pick him as a running mate. Because other than Vermont, the most socialist, crunchy, leftist state in the union is
Washington
State.
Yeah.
And so it's the perfect get through the primary balance of strengths. I hate even saying the word strengths when it comes to anything in the Democratic Party, because I just think they're honestly the entire gang that can't shoot straight. So Inslee is shooting for that, and again, I think he's shooting to be part of the ticket with Bernie Sanders. Now, many of these other people we talked about, their egos are too big to want to be on a ticket with Bernie. Or anybody else for that matter. But, you know, there's this little thing in our Constitution that basically says that, you know, they have to name a running mate. And oftentimes, Chuck, often, not always though, and we just saw this in 2016, oftentimes the nominee for that party will pick a person who was running against them.
Oh, very often.
Usually the person who was right behind them in popularity so they can try to combine it. I don't think it's going to happen in the Democrat cycle this time. The Inslee-Sanders thing might be there, could be. And honestly, the more you talked about him with Delaney, the more it would make sense for him and Tulsi Gabbard to line up together. But again, these are tickets that are not going to happen.
I agree. Yeah,
they're not going to happen. But we still have some more people throwing their hat in the ring.
Oh, yeah.
Some that our listeners probably have heard of in passing, but have forgotten completely who they are, and others that they've never heard of before, nor will ever again. So we have the former mayor of San Antonio, Texas, Julian Castro. And if that name sounds vaguely familiar to people, it was because Julian Castro served in the Obama administration.
Yes, he did.
Absolutely. Julian Castro, I believe, was the secretary of Housing and Urban Development. He was HUD secretary. I pulled it up here. So, yeah, he was. He was HUD secretary.
And he got forced out, as I recall.
He got forced out. So, again, he's the only Latino, if you don't count Beto. If you don't count the Irish Latino, Beto O'Rourke, he's the only Latino in the race for the Democrats right now. Okay, so you got him, and I don't see him getting very far. You also have, and again, we're only going to talk about the ones who've formally announced. So that's mostly the politicians.
Right.
But you have a couple of other people who've announced in the Democratic Party. One is a former tech executive by the name of Andrew Yang. And if you want to write that down somewhere, you should, because it's probably the only time you're ever going to hear his name. Basically, I think he's jumped in order to protect himself from being asked by all these other candidates to write big checks to them, which is a smart business move if you think about it, Chuck. But Yang is not going to go anywhere. And then there's another person, and honestly, this happens to be probably one of the most intriguing candidacies that I've heard of. Okay. And I know people have heard of this particular candidate.
They may have some of her books.
Although,
Although they may want to think about getting rid of those.
And who we're talking about is noted spiritualist Marianne Williamson. Okay. Boy, you have to be as old as Chuck and I to go back to remember Marianne Williamson.
Oh, gosh.
And her, can you remember what her book was called?
Course in Miracles.
A Course in Miracles. That's right. She was a spiritualist, which means that she's completely denied the power, authority, and divinity of the God of the universe and his revealed word, and is making it up all on her own to make herself feel better. But Marianne Williamson is in there, so... you know,
well, she also wrote a book called Healing the Soul of America.
Okay, well, Transcendental Meditation for Everybody, is that it, pretty much?
Well, if you'll recall, there were people doing A Course in Miracles in churches, in Christian churches.
I try to block those bitter memories out of my head. Sorry. Yes, but you're right. There were, because there are many churches who will adopt heretical and...
Syncretism is alive and well.
And horribly ungodly things,
yeah.
and bring them in. I reference any church that uses the Message as a Bible.
Yeah.
And I don't care if I offended anybody listening in today. You should... you know what? Offense means that you're actually starting to wake up.
You know what I would do? I would invite people who think that's really a Bible to get a hold of us, and we'll interview you on the air.
Absolutely. Oh, would love to. Love to. Okay. So, all right. So those are the announced in candidates. But Chuck, everybody's hearing about some other names. And, of course, we have to talk about...
Oh, no. There's one... Oh, no. This person has formed
an exploratory committee. The mayor of South Bend, Indiana, Pete Buttigieg. Okay. And again, that's as far as you'll ever know about this candidate.
Pete will appear on the Indiana, probably on the Indiana primary ballot, and nowhere else.
And probably nowhere else in the entire planet. So, of course, he's singing the progressive leftist mantra as well. So that's all fine. The other person that you're going to hear a lot about, who hasn't announced yet, and who many Democrat rank and file, you know, talking heads are starting to get angry with because he's dawdling, is former Vice President Joe Biden. They want Joe in. They want Joe in badly. As a matter of fact, there was a talk piece that floated out there today about the fact that Biden's folks, even though he's not announced that he's in, are seriously considering making an offer for the VP slot for the presidential run that he's not doing yet.
Yeah.
To who, Chuck?
Stacey Abrams.
And that name should be very familiar to folks.
It should be, but if it's not, she ran again for governor of Georgia. And lost by about 40,000 votes.
Something of that nature.
It was a very small number, yeah. And has been jumping up and down and claiming that the election was stolen because people weren't allowed to vote and all
Well, that's because the Republican she was running against for governor happened to be the sitting
Secretary of State. Yeah. she has made some extremely nonsensical statements, but she is a hero to the far left.
Yes.
And she's not really a very good candidate. She wasn't a good candidate for governor. She probably won. And she's definitely not going to be a good candidate for
Vice President.
Even though supposedly the vice president doesn't do much. Well, he really does, but we'll leave that for a discussion for another day. But Biden advisors consider Stacey Abrams as running mate out of the gate. Why would you pick Stacey Abrams?
Because I
can think of one reason.
Because she's black and female, and there's nobody being represented to that level that would work with Joe Biden, because Kamala Harris won't.
Won't. Yeah. No, I agree. That's what she is. She's available.
Yep.
She is a sort of an icon to the minority community.
Yes.
And I'm going to be as gentle as I can. Let's say she's pliable.
Yes, you probably could say that. She's
in the right hand. She's pliable.
She's not as politically savvy as she believes herself to be.
Exactly.
Okay. I think that's a fair statement. Okay. So those are our announced and wait a minute. No, I'm forgetting one other person, Chuck, which is the reason why I count 16. Okay. The most obvious human being on the face of the planet for the Democratic Party and the one who probably will be their nominee, Michelle Obama.
Oh, gosh. You think so?
Michelle Obama is doing a book and talking tour around the country. And when she came to Ohio last week in Cleveland, the plain dealer put on a show for her with front page banner headlines and billboards and everything else. Okay, let's just be quite frank about it. Everybody in the Democratic Party will clear out if Michelle Obama decides to get in.
I'm not sure that's true.
You may have a couple of... Bernie Sanders will never get out. I'll qualify that. Bernie Sanders will never get out. But everybody else on that ticket will be vying to be the VP.
Yeah, okay.
With the exception of Joe Biden, who will just stay out.
I will eat crow if that happens. I don't see it.
Okay.
Now, yes, is she a darling of the press? Oh, we're going to hear about her wonderful shaped arms and all that business. And what a genius she was. The fact that she had to surrender her law license really doesn't speak well to that. But that doesn't get any press coverage.
Of course it doesn't.
She would be an obvious candidate, and let's face it, that's how Hillary got into the job of senator. And she is the spark plug behind Barack. Yep.
She was the brains of that operation.
Yes. He's got some PR issues, which will slough off on her.
Some, yes, but the point is that I think that they insulated her enough during his presidency that there'll be very few that will actually stick to her. Her biggest thing is, who does she offend when she picks a VP nominee?
Yeah.
And right now, looking at that entire list, there isn't anybody on there she's going to pick. She will go completely
off menu.
Off script.
Yeah.
She'll go completely off script.
Yep.
In order to make something happen. It will be very interesting to see because, again, the Iowa caucuses, which are the Democrats, that's the starting gate for the real election, is less than a year away. It's in February of this year.
That's right.
It's less than a year.
There will be debates as of like October.
Yes. And Fox News will not be carrying.
Not the Democratic side,
no. Now, President Trump already has a primary challenger.
Yes, he does. But there's a couple of Democrats we should talk about. The fact that we had another Ohio name that was in.
And now is out. Sherrod Brown.
Sherrod Brown.
Absolutely.
I think the long knife having to do with the wife abuse, spousal abuse thing got him.
It finally caught up,
which tells me there may be more to the story than he's allowing. Because if it's a false accusation, you can weather that storm,
right?
But
if
it's the real thing, and there's somebody out there who knows where the bodies are buried, not so much.
That's right.
There was also Michael Bloomberg, who's on the Democratic list. When he was mayor of New York, he was a Republican.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. He was.
He came into the office on the recommendation of Rudy Giuliani.
Mm-hmm. He did.
Who he followed. And he was a disaster for New York.
Mm, yes, he was.
He was sort of in and then out.
Right.
You got another from the Great Northwest Socialist Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, and that was Oregon Center, another senator, Jeff Markley, was talking about it.
Dipped his toe and then pulled it right back as soon as he felt how cold it was.
Now, this is from your neck of the woods there, Barry.
Yeah.
West Virginia State Senator Richard Ojeda.
Oh, Ojeda was like the flavor of the minute.
Yeah.
In West Virginia. He was going to be the great hope who was going to come in and win a congressional seat and, you know, take over everything down there. And he lost splendidly because Trump won West Virginia pretty doggone handily. He lost that challenge splendidly and then turned around less than a month later and announced he was running for president.
President, yeah.
And now has pulled out.
Well, of course he has, because everybody said, are you insane?
Well, and the answer probably is yes.
Yes.
I mean, sorry to say it, but yes, I do believe that that is a big problem there. So, you know, you've got those particular issues with these candidates. So, I believe that many of the Democrat talking heads who are looking at this have figured it out already. Trump's going to win re-election. With the field they've got right now, with the baggage that they're carrying, and with the idiocy that they're spouting, and we'll come back to Elizabeth Warren in just a minute, there's anything short of divine intervention will keep Donald Trump from getting his second term in office. He can beat any one of these people with his hands tied behind his back.
I'm thinking.
The only one that he might have trouble with is Michelle Obama. Because it'll paint him as misogynist, racist, patriarchal. I mean, you use the pejorative, well, they will use it on him.
If you recall, when Hillary was running for the Senate seat, there was a Republican guy who was running against her whose name escapes me. He was a Republican state senator, I think, from New York. And if you'll recall, he approached her podium for something.
Mm-hmm.
And the cry from the press was that he made himself big in front of
her.
In an attempt to intimidate her.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff Trump will get.
That's exactly the kind of stuff he'll get.
There'll be women will be screaming about how they needed to be treated as equals and treated the same as a man. And then as soon as a man does something that a man would do with another man,
then all of a sudden
you're a misogynist.
Cad. You're a cad. Yeah.
You're intimidating. you are being aggressive. Well, of course you're being aggressive. If you're going to be president of the United States, you need to be a little aggressive.
Just a bit.
You know, a guy with an inferiority complex should not be president of the United States, because that thing about commander-in-chief requires some intestinal fortitude.
Can you do me a favor and not say that too loudly? I really don't want John Casey carrying
this. Oh, please. Like he could come up with it?
Okay.
Pardon me, but he doesn't have that.
Not in a right way, but yeah, he could come up with the bluster and the arrogance.
Oh well, gosh, the bluster and the arrogance—he's all over that. I mean, yep. he's got that part of it down. I can remember when he was running in 16, standing at the podium saying, "Well, you know, am I the only adult in the room?" Okay, John. Seriously, put that away.
Mm-hmm.
That's not playing here.
Yeah.
There were some legitimate things. And if you recall, those debates were very often 15 against one. 15 Republican, essentially,
establishment
rhinos
versus
coming against Trump, who was the outsider.
And he handled every last
handled
one of them.
All of them.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of a bloody mess. Now, the one thing that the Democrats are hoping for that will change the calculus of the 2020 election. Now, let's go back to Senator Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts, because she has been the first out of the gate calling for this particular change.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yes. Senator Elizabeth Warren probably, and whether or not she's just doing it because it's just the progressive leftist thing to do right now, or if she actually has thought this through and realized it's the only shot a Democrat's going to have in 2020 of possibly unseating Donald Trump. She is calling for the elimination of the Electoral College. Now, Chuck, you and I teach classes.
That's right.
On the Constitution. We talk in depth about the importance of the Electoral College. As a matter of fact, I've been recently going around to various groups throughout Central and North Central Ohio doing a presentation on the Electoral College and a little effort that's called National Popular Votes.
Yeah.
And yes, it's just what you think it is, folks. It is a, it's an effort, and which has actually been going on since 2003.
It's been around for quite a while.
Okay, this started in earnest back in 2003, but it was quiet back then. They put together their little think tank and their little cadre of people you've never heard of before, state senators and state representatives.
College professors.
All coming up, and they created this book, and the book's like 900 pages long, Chuck. It's thick. I gave one away as a door prize simply because I didn't want to have to haul it back home at one of my talks called Every Vote Counts. Okay. And what they're calling for is not the elimination of the Electoral College, because they understand that that takes a change to the Constitution
That's right.
of the United States. What they're calling for is what they call a workaround. They believe that they've, in their groupthink, have come up with a way in order to nullify the effect of the Electoral College. And it's very funny, Chuck, but how they frame what they're doing is very similar to the way Convention of States Project frames their belief that we can call an Article 5 convention. Because they believe the states can usurp the plain language of the Constitution. As we know, the Electoral College, Article 2, Section 1, is a creation of the founders. And, well, contrary to what you're hearing right now in the media, and yes, folks, if you paid any attention at all this last week, you heard it. Contrary to the popular miscommunication, that the Electoral College was to engender and solidify and perpetuate slavery.
Yeah, it's an absurdity.
Which is complete absurdity when you start thinking about it. It actually was a mechanism to make sure that states with smaller populations and therefore less representation were not completely overwhelmed and destroyed politically by larger states. Now, funny thing is, Chuck, during the founding era, you brought this up. Which was the largest state in the Union that had the most power, the most representation, and also was a slave state?
Virginia, baby.
So the Electoral College actually was put in place to keep states like Virginia from riding roughshod over states like Vermont or New Hampshire or Maine or how many others? Massachusetts.
Yeah, those
Rhode Island.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, those were later. A couple of those were later
Maine,
states.
Maine and New Hampshire were later states,
But, Massachusetts,
Connecticut, yes.
Rhode Island.
Yes.
Delaware. Delaware was a slave state, and so was Maryland, but it had mixed, mixed sentiments on that particular issue. Pennsylvania. Which was not as big a state then as it is now.
So the Electoral College was a fabrication of the.
It was a historical outgrowth. It wasn't like it was something so brand new that it was completely unprecedented.
Well, no, no.
Because if you know anything about European history, there was this little thing in the center of Europe called the Holy Roman Empire, and the Holy Roman Empire was essentially a group of semi-autonomous nations, duchies and principalities and kingdoms and that kind of thing, who were held together by an emperor. And how was the emperor elected? By an electoral college of the electors. And I can't remember how many electors there were in the Holy Roman Empire. But actually, the King of England and the current Queen...
Mm-hmm.
The King of England was the Elector of Hanover.
Yes.
Well, if he was only an elector, well, he was royalty. He was a prince.
Sure.
Nonetheless, that was sort of the idea they took it from. There were other places where there were electoral colleges and that kind of an apparatus. And in every case, it was a grouping of semi-autonomous nations or states who were coming together under one umbrella, usually for the purposes of defense, diplomacy, and trade, which is exactly what the Holy Roman Empire was about.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what the United States of America was formed to be. So the reason that you, for instance, did the Electoral College in the United States was to keep states like Virginia and New York from running roughshod.
And Pennsylvania from running roughshod over everybody else.
Over everybody else, over the other 10 colonies.
Yeah, because if you think about it, New York, Pennsylvania, and Virginia probably represented 60 to 65% of the total representation.
Oh, gosh, I think half the people in the country lived in Virginia.
Exactly. So to say that the Electoral College was to perpetuate slavery was actually completely counter to what it was actually prepared for, which
exactly.
was to protect small states, many of whom were not slaveholding states, from being overwhelmed by the large states.
And believe me, there were James Madison really, really, really wanted Virginia to run the show.
Yes, of course he did. He was a Virginian.
And Alexander Hamilton wanted New York to run the show.
Because he was from New York, absolutely.
But they worked together because they could see that the big argument was that these little states aren't pulling their weight.
Right.
Therefore, they shouldn't have as much representation in Congress. And they said, we're not coming in unless you give us that representation, which is why we have a Senate.
Exactly. Now, Chuck, just as they are inverting the true meaning of the Electoral College,
right.
they're now inverting the argument to try to convince people to get rid of it or to bypass it. The National Popular Vote Movement is a compact that states are entering into. Basically, it's an agreement that has to pass through the state legislature and be signed by the governor to say that on the eventuality of enough states joining the compact to equal 270 or greater electoral votes.
Well, 271.
Yeah, 270 is the minimum. So, yeah, 270. Because
really?
Remember, 538. Because D.C. gets three electors.
Yeah, that's right. That's right,
270. And remember, electors are distributed to states on the basis of population and two for each state for the two U.S. Senate
right.
seats, because it's for your congressional seats and your U.S. Senate seats. Since D.C. is considered a non-voting...
well, they get three electoral
they
votes.
They get three electoral votes in the Electoral College. They just don't get... they have a delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, et cetera, to Congress who doesn't get a vote.
Right.
So, but they get three electoral votes, which is the bare minimum that any state gets, is three, because you get one
right.
for each senators and one
congressman.
And every state is guaranteed two senators.
And one congressman.
And at least one congressman, because you get a congressman for every so many hundreds of thousands of population you have.
Right.
Minimum of one. So 270, because 538 is the number, which is in, so half of that's 269. So you have to have half plus one. You have to have 50% plus one, so that's 270. So the compact reads that when they get a number of states joining the compact where their votes equal a minimum of 270 electoral votes, then the compact goes into effect. And that these states are agreeing to award the electoral votes of the state to the winner of the popular vote nationally.
Right.
Not within their state.
Their state.
So basically what they're saying is, we're going to disenfranchise the voters of our own state.
Exactly.
In order to be part of this big progressive push to get rid of this archaic remnant of slavery, which isn't.
Which it isn't.
Which isn't. Okay. As of last week, Colorado, we talked about that a little bit earlier, John Hickenlooper, the governor, et cetera, Colorado became the 12th state to join the compact. They now have 183 electoral votes secured within the compact idea. Again, they only need 270, so they're less than 100 away.
Yep.
But their big problem is the 12 states that they have, New York, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, Rhode Island.
Which were going to vote Democratic anyway.
Anyway, basically they went California, New York. They picked the liberal states, the low-hanging fruit. nothing else is going to be anywhere near that easy.
Oh, no. There are 38 states who are basically going to say, no way.
Right. And, but the point is that what they're trying to do now is swing a major state. And, of course, there are five major states that they're looking at.
Oh, Texas.
Florida.
Has to be Illinois. Oh, Illinois is in.
Illinois is in,
yeah.
They're looking at Texas, Florida, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. Those are the five states because those are five of the major states that have large numbers of electoral votes. And if they can get one of those, they believe that they can knock off another one or two and get to their 270. Now, Elizabeth Warren's pushing for this. You're going to start hearing the Democrat candidates all pushing for this. Their problem is that the arguments they're using is that our current system disenfranchises voters. And it causes the candidates not to have to go to places like Iowa, New Hampshire, Wyoming, New Mexico.
Montana.
Except for the fact that those are the places they do go to. Because now, we had a little permutation from the original Electoral College by the states at one point in time, because we now have in all but two states in the union what's called a winner-take-all system. If you win the popular vote in the state, you win all the electors in that state. Ohio's part of that.
Yep.
I wish we weren't,
yes.
The two states that are still rewarded by you have to win the congressional district popular vote in order to get that elector in that congressional district are Maine and Nebraska, the two who still have the original system. I would wish we'd go the other direction and get all the other 48 states to go back to that system. Then you would find that candidates would have to run in Dubuque and Poughkeepsie,
yep,
and Lancaster. And
Newark.
Newark. And in Pliny, West Virginia, if they wanted to get some votes.
Van Wert. Yeah, all the little places. No, you're right on that. Now, I can foresee that if that system gets implemented or an attempt to implement it, there will be massive lawsuits on the federal level saying, no, because you are disenfranchising me. We voted Republican in this state, but the state voted Democrat because that's the way the popular vote went. You disenfranchised me. No.
Well, here's the other little problem they're running into, Chuck. There's another little provision in the Constitution that basically says that a compact entered into among several states has to be approved by Congress.
Yes.
Oops.
Yeah.
Because even if you get the number of states to get 270 electoral vote numbers for the compact, it doesn't mean that every one of those representatives and senators in those states are going to support handing over the votes of the people of their state to the winner of the national popular vote. Why? I've got a map that I showed during my presentations. It's a map of the U.S. with each of the states, and there's this huge swath of blue, about 30-plus states that are in blue. Does that mean those are all Democrat one states? No, but not by a long shot. There's one other color on the map, and it's a little red dot in the lower left-hand corner in California. It's the Los Angeles County. That little red dot, there is more population in that little red dot than there is in any one of those blue-colored states on the map. That's the reason why we have the Electoral College.
That's exactly
is to keep
right.
a candidate from running to New York, Chicago, L.A., Miami, San Francisco, San Diego, and winning a national election
exactly
without ever touching any of those 30-some other states.
All right. Now you know what we think. And we want to know what you think. First of all, I'm going to tell you, don't forget, please sign up at relationshipsunderconstruction.com. That's relationshipsunderconstruction.com. And come to the Relationships Under Construction Banquet at the Villa Milano on Schrock Road in Columbus on April 4th. Festivities start at 5:30. And be there. And please come and see us at our table when you're there. Again, April 4th. Come help us raise money for a very worthy cause in Relationships Under Construction. That's relationshipsunderconstruction.com. And please go out to our website where you can contact us, www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.
I'm fond of saying that kids have a hole in their soul in the shape of their dad, that God whispers into the wombs of mothers that there's this one that will love them like no other. And if a father is unable or unwilling to fill that hole, it can leave a wound that's not easily healed. And I know that because I'm a wounded soul.
That's Roland Warren, CEO of CareNet, who will be the keynote speaker at the 10th annual RUC Fundraising Banquet. Join us on April 4th as we celebrate a decade of support. Make your reservations now at relationshipsunderconstruction.com.